Have you ever tried to divide by zero on a calculator? You punch it in, hit equals, and well, you immediately get that blinking error message.
Yeah, it's pretty much a universal
Right.
experience.
We've all seen the calculator essentially just, throw its hands up and refuse to do the math.
It's the mathematical equivalent of hitting a brick wall.
Yeah.
And I mean, while it's mildly annoying when you're just messing around on a pocket calculator, in the realm of high-level mathematics, physics, and especially artificial intelligence, hitting that wall is absolutely catastrophic.
It's not just a blinking error anymore.
No, exactly. It doesn't just blink at you. It can crash billion-dollar training runs or completely collapse critical physics simulations.
And that error, that mathematical brick wall, is actually the starting point for today's deep dive. We are exploring a genuinely fascinating, honestly incredibly dense set of notes that outlines a unified theory of what mathematicians call singular weight matrices.
Which sounds intimidating, but it's really just that divide by zero problem scaled up.
Right. And our mission today is to show you how a tiny, seemingly boring mathematical fix for this problem, something called an adaptive epsilon, actually serves as the hidden backbone for, get this, 32 different scientific theories.
It's a massive synthesis.
It really is. We're going to look at how this source takes abstract math, translates it into literal physical mechanics, and then eventually uses it to map out quantum computing.
It is a remarkable piece of work. But to really grasp what the source is doing, we kind of have to correct that calculator analogy just a bit.
Okay, lay it on me.
So, in linear algebra, which is the math powering modern AI and physics engines, you aren't usually dealing with single numbers. You are dealing with matrices, which are these massive grids of data.
Right.
And you don't divide by a matrix, you try to invert it.
Gotcha. So if you picture a matrix as this massive, complex jigsaw puzzle, inverting it is essentially solving the puzzle to find the original pieces.
It's a great way to visualize it.
And a singular matrix is a puzzle where the math is just broken down. Like maybe two pieces are completely identical, or a critical piece is just missing entirely.
Exactly. Because the information is incomplete, the puzzle is mathematically impossible to solve. The system hits a wall.
And what happens then?
Well, if an algorithm encounters a singular matrix, the values it is trying to compute just shoot off toward infinity.
And system crashes.
Yeah, the entire system collapses. So for decades, mathematicians have used this tiny fudge factor. They take a microscopic value called epsilon and they just add it into the
They
matrix.
basically force the puzzle piece to fit.
Exactly. Even if it slightly distorts the picture, adding that static epsilon prevents the system from blowing up. It's a safety net.
Right.
But the source we are looking at argues that a static epsilon is, well, it's a blunt, rudimentary tool. The notes introduce a completely different approach, a smart adaptive
So
epsilon.
it changes.
Yes. Instead of a fixed tiny number, this mathematical safety net dynamically changes based on the exact context of the data passing through it.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if a standard epsilon is like, say, placing a massive static foam pit at the bottom of a cliff,
Right, it'll stop your fall.
it stops the fall. Yeah,
Yeah.
but it kills all your forward momentum and efficiency. So a smart epsilon is entirely different. It's like a safety net that calculates your mass, your trajectory, and your velocity in real time.
Real-time adjustments, exactly.
And it generates just enough resistance to guide you safely to the ground without stopping your forward progress entirely.
That captures the dynamic perfectly. And the author of these notes realized that this smart safety net concept is not just a clever trick for fixing broken matrices.
It's way bigger than that.
Much bigger. It is actually the underlying mechanism behind 32 major mathematical and scientific theories.
Which is wild. The notes categorize them across four major domains, right? You've got mathematical foundations, neural network theories, physical and geometric theories, and statistical theories.
Yeah, the four pillars.
So what the source is essentially arguing is that these vastly different fields are all just turning specific mathematical dials to adjust how that safety net behaves.
Precisely. And the source identifies six specific components or dials, to use your term, that these theories use. They are magnitude, curvature, uncertainty, geometry, temporal, and spectral.
Okay, let's ground that for the listener. How do those dials actually work in practice? Take the temporal dial, for instance.
Okay, the temporal dial adjusts the epsilon based on time or progression. So if you are training a neural network at the very beginning of the process, the algorithm doesn't really know much, right?
It's basically guessing.
Right. It makes wild, erratic guesses. So the temporal dial senses that early stage and deploys a very thick, heavy safety net to prevent the model from spiraling completely out of control.
Okay, that makes sense.
But as the training progresses over hours or weeks and the AI becomes more precise, the temporal dial slowly thins out the safety net.
So he gives him more freedom.
Exactly. It allows the algorithm to make finer, more delicate calculations without interference.
And the source notes that tuning these dials achieves two critical mathematical properties, ensuring boundedness and optimizing what is called the condition number.
Boundedness and the condition number, yes.
But we should probably explain what a condition number actually is for anyone who isn't a math major.
It is a really critical concept. Think of the condition number as a measure of how sensitive a mathematical system is to tiny errors.
Okay.
If a matrix has a terrible condition number, it means that a microscopic error in your input data, say a sensor reading being off by just one decimal point, will get magnified exponentially.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, resulting in a wildly incorrect output.
So it's kind of like a steering wheel with way too much sensitivity. You twitch your finger a millimeter to the left, and the car violently swerves across three lanes of traffic.
Yes, that's exactly it. The adaptive epsilon mathematically bounds the condition number. It essentially tightens up the steering column.
It forces stability.
It guarantees that no matter how complex the AI model gets, or how chaotic the physics simulation becomes, those tiny errors will not amplify into system failures.
Which is obviously what you want if you're building software that, drives cars or manages financial markets.
Absolutely.
But this is where the source makes an incredibly sharp pivot.
Yeah.
I mean, unifying 22 theories mathematically is a major feat, but the author takes it out of the realm of pure numbers and forces it into the real, tangible world.
This is my favorite part.
They literally translate these abstract algorithms into a mechanical engine.
This is where the framework becomes truly radical. The notes provide a complete matrix to mechanics dictionary.
The dictionary for math and engines.
Yeah. It argues that a mathematical matrix isn't just a grid of data. It behaves exactly like a physical mechanical linkage network, a system of rigid levers and gears transferring force.
And the dictionary maps it out perfectly. The singular values of a matrix, the numbers that determine how much the matrix stretches or compresses data, are mapped directly to the stiffness of a physical spring.
Right. And the mathematical inverse of a matrix is translated as a system of physical counterweights.
And our hero, the adaptive epsilon, the mathematical safety net.
In this mechanical translation, epsilon is mapped directly to physical friction and damping. It is the literal mechanism of energy dissipation.
Okay, wait. I have to challenge this premise for a second.
Go for it.
If I am an engineer building a state-of-the-art AI, my entire goal is speed and efficiency. I want my model to process billions of parameters as fast as mathematically possible.
Naturally.
Why on earth would I purposefully introduce an equation that acts as friction? Doesn't friction just slow an engine down and waste a bunch of energy?
That's a very logical objection. But think about what happens to a high-performance physical engine if you remove all the load and all the internal resistance.
Okay.
If you put a car in neutral and just press the accelerator to the floor, the engine will rev faster and faster until the RPMs exceed the physical limits of the metal.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah, the engine will literally tear itself apart. It'll throw a rod right through the hood.
Okay, the runaway engine.
Exactly. In mathematics, when an algorithm encounters that singular matrix we talked about earlier, it creates an infinite feedback loop.
The values shoot up.
The mathematical values skyrocket toward infinity. It is a runaway engine. So by introducing epsilon as mathematical friction, you are providing just enough damping to absorb that infinite mathematical energy.
You prevent the algorithm from tearing itself apart.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
So let's look at how the source maps these specific theories to actual engine parts. Because they aren't just generic metaphors, right? They are direct translations of the force laws of physics.
Yes, direct mathematical mappings.
Let's start with theory one in the notes, Tikhonov regularization.
Tikhonov regularization is the most basic version of our safety net. In math, it simply adds a constant, unchanging penalty to the matrix.
And mechanically.
Mechanically, the source translates this exact equation to a dry friction block. Imagine a cinder block sliding across rough concrete.
Sounds a lot.
Right. It provides a constant dumb drag. It absolutely works to slow the system down, but it's completely unresponsive to nuance.
It's just brute force friction.
Mm.
But then the source points to theory two, which is adaptive Tikhonov. In this algorithm, the mathematical penalty scales depending on the magnitude of the data flowing through it.
And that mathematical scaling perfectly matches the physics equation for a viscous fluid damper.
Like oil in a shock absorber.
Exactly. Think of a piston pushing through a cylinder filled with thick oil. If the data is moving slowly and safely, the piston easily glides through the oil with almost zero resistance.
But if it speeds up?
Right. If the algorithm suddenly spikes and tries to accelerate too fast, the fluid dynamics of the oil create massive immediate resistance. The harder you push, the harder it pushes back. The math is identical.
That is fascinating. But it gets even more complex than that. Let's jump to theory 10, the lottery ticket hypothesis.
Oh, this is a great one.
In artificial intelligence, this is the theory that within any massive, unwieldy neural network, there's a tiny subnetwork of connections, the winning tickets, that actually do all the important work.
Right.
And if you can identify them, you can mathematically prune away the rest of the network, achieving the exact same result with a fraction of the computing power.
And mechanically, the source maps the math of the lottery ticket hypothesis to a selective clutch transmission.
Because a physical clutch literally engages the specific drive gears you need to move the car forward while physically disengaging the rest of the transmission to save power.
Yes.
The algorithm for pruning neural connections is structurally identical to the mechanical logic of a clutch plate dropping useless gears.
Exactly. You are looking at the math of AI, but the physics of a transmission. And the author doesn't just catalog these parts. They evaluate them like a master mechanic.
You rank them.
Yeah. The source literally grades the 32 theories based on their mechanical performance.
Right. And some of the more advanced theories score perfect tens. Theory 16, for instance, which is inexplicably called the shampoo optimizer.
It's a very weird name.
Putting the wild name aside, what does this algorithm actually do, and why does the source map it to a twin screw compressor?
So in deep learning, the shampoo optimizer is a technique that preconditions gradients.
What you mean?
What that means is it takes massive, chaotic, multidimensional matrices of data, and it mathematically compresses them down, squeezing out the inefficiencies before feeding them into the main algorithm.
So it streamlines the data.
Right. This allows the AI to process vastly more data simultaneously.
And mechanically, a twin screw compressor does the exact same thing to physical matter. It takes a massive volume of ambient air, catches it between two interlocking spinning rotors, and physically forces it into a highly compressed, dense stream of high-pressure air to feed an engine.
The math matches the mechanics.
The data flow of the algorithm mirrors the fluid dynamics of the compressor perfectly.
It does. And once you view these algorithms as modular engine components, you know, compressors, clutches, fluid dampers, the next logical step is to realize you don't have to use them in isolation.
Right. A mechanic wouldn't just install a great compressor and then ignore the transmission entirely.
Exactly. The source introduces a framework called the cross-fertilization matrix. It proves you can physically bolt different mathematical theories together to build a superior machine.
You are essentially hot-rodding mathematics. Taking parts from different scientific disciplines and creating hybrid algorithms.
Precisely. Let's look at one of the hybrid examples from the notes. We take theory 18, the Beer's metric.
Okay.
This originates in quantum information geometry. In math, it is incredibly precise at measuring the exact distance between two different probability distributions.
So mechanically, the source maps the Beer's metric to a highly sensitive balance beam. It's a precision measurement tool.
Now, we take that balance beam and we bolt it to Theory 27 Elastic Weight Consolidation, or EWC.
EWC, right.
In machine learning, EWC is used to solve the problem of catastrophic forgetting. You want an AI to learn a new task without overwriting the crucial data it learned yesterday.
Which is why the source mechanically maps EWC to an array of lock washers.
Yes.
It mathematically clamps down on the specific neural weights that hold the most important past knowledge, physically locking those gears into place so the new data flow can't overwrite them.
Exactly. So you take the highly sensitive balance beam and you bolt it into the array of lock washers. By combining these two distinct theories, you invent a brand new, highly advanced mathematical engine.
And the source calls this hybrid robust quantum variational inference.
Which is quite the mouthful.
It is. But that title brings us to the final, honestly most ambitious leap in this entire framework. Because as brilliant as it is to translate abstract math into physical engine parts, classical mechanics has a hard limit.
It definitely does.
No matter how perfectly you design a physical transmission or how well you calibrate a fluid damper, there is a ceiling to physical reality. If you spin physical gears fast enough, the friction and heat will eventually just melt the metal.
The laws of thermodynamics become the ultimate bottleneck. If we want to process the exponentially growing data sets of the modern world, we can't rely on the logic of classical mechanics forever.
We have to go smaller.
We have to abandon physical gears entirely and move to the subatomic level.
So the source asks the ultimate question. If these mathematical matrices perfectly map to classical physics, can they also map to quantum mechanics?
And the answer the source provides is a definitive yes. It introduces what it calls the universal quantum transform.
The final step.
Yeah. This is a rigorous mathematical proof that meticulously translates all 32 of the classical mechanical components we've been discussing into quantum analogs. It rebuilds the engine using the probabilistic rules of the subatomic realm.
Okay, let's ground that translation because it's genuinely hard to visualize.
Yeah.
How does physical friction like that sliding cinder block or the viscous fluid damper translate into a quantum state? I mean, you can't just pour physical oil onto an electron.
No, you definitely can't. But you have to look at what friction actually is.
Okay.
In a classical engine, friction is kinetic energy being lost to the surrounding environment as heat. It's energy dissipation.
Right.
In the quantum realm, the mathematical analog to that energy loss is called decoherence or amplitude vamping.
So instead of losing heat to the environment, a quantum system loses information to the environment.
Precisely. Amplitude damping bleeds off the excess quantum information, achieving the exact same mathematical damping effect as a physical shock absorber, but through probabilistic information loss rather than brute force heat generation.
Oh, wow. What about the transmission components like theory 5, condition optimization, which we classically mapped to a variable gear transmission, keeping the system stable under load?
Yeah.
How does a transmission work without physical gears?
The source translates that classical transmission into the quantum concept of entanglement entropy.
Entanglement entropy.
Right. In a quantum system, stability doesn't come from rigid metal teeth locking together. It comes from how deeply interconnected or entangled the individual qubits are.
So they share the load.
Yes. Entanglement entropy measures that sharing of state information. It optimizes the interconnections on the fly to handle the data load. It is a quantum transmission.
Let's look at what happens when you apply this universal quantum transform to a hybrid engine. Because the notes provide a stunning example of combining two massive mathematical concepts.
They do.
First, you take a neural ODE. This is a type of algorithm that models continuous change over time.
And mechanically, a neural ODE is mapped to a hydraulic flow system. Continuous fluid moving under pressure through a network of pipes.
And you merge that continuous hydraulic flow with stochastic weight averaging. Classically, this is a technique that takes multiple snapshots of a model during training and averages them out to find the most stable configuration. Mechanically, the source maps that to a massive spinning gyrometric flywheel.
Because its entire job is to smooth out the erratic pulses of an engine into one smooth, continuous rotation.
Exactly. So classically, you have a hybrid machine. Continuous hydraulic flow being stabilized by a massive spinning flywheel. But when you pass that classical hybrid equation through the universal quantum transform, it becomes a quantum variational ODE.
The mechanics entirely change.
They do.
Yes. The continuous hydraulic flow transforms into Hamiltonian simulation, which is the literal quantum evolution of energy over time. And that stabilizing physical flywheel transforms into quantum ensemble methods.
So instead of a massive piece of metal physically spinning to average out erratic energy pulses, the quantum ensemble method allows multiple probabilistic states to overlap simultaneously.
And naturally collapse into the single most stable answer.
Yes. It takes the problem, skips the physical constraints entirely, and uses the probabilistic rules of the universe to solve it instantly.
Exactly. You have taken an AI training technique, visualized it as plumbing and spinning metal, and transformed it into a quantum circuit capable of processing information in ways a classical computer never could.
It is just a phenomenal progression. Let's take a moment to look back at the ground we covered today. We started this deep dive with a calculator error.
Right, the blinking screen.
We looked at a tiny, seemingly insignificant fraction, the adaptive epsilon, the smart safety net, whose only job was to prevent a matrix from dividing by zero and destroying the calculation.
And we followed that single mathematical thread as it tied together 32 completely different scientific theories. It proved that AI optimization, statistical analysis, and physics modeling are all just tuning different dials on the exact same underlying mechanism.
From there, the source took those abstract equations and proved they were structurally identical to physical gears, pistons, clutches, and fluid dampers. It gave us a literal blueprint to build a mathematical engine.
A literal engine of math.
Yeah. And finally, it evolved those cast iron parts into quantum circuits, entanglement entropy, and amplitude damping.
It is crucial to internalize why this specific framework is so empowering.
Why does it matter to you, the listener?
Exactly. We exist in a world that is increasingly dictated by incredibly complex, highly intimidating algorithms. They manage our infrastructure, they govern financial systems, and they drive artificial intelligence.
And to most people, they just look like magic.
Right. To most people, these systems look like impenetrable black boxes of magic. But this deep dive systematically strips away the magic. It proves that these algorithms are just modular engines.
Parts that fit together.
And engines, no matter how complex, can be understood. They can be visualized, they can be taken apart, and they can be methodically upgraded.
You can literally open the hood of the universe's most complex math and see how the gears mesh together. It completely changes how you interact with these systems.
It really does.
But there is a final lingering implication in these notes that I want to leave you to ponder long after this deep dive ends. The framework we explore today rigorously mathematically proves that you can take an abstract, supposedly human-invented math equation, translate it perfectly into a physical machine made of metal and fluid,
and then perfectly translate that machine into the probabilistic behavior of subatomic particles.
Exactly. It demonstrates a flawless one-to-one structural mapping across three entirely distinct domains of reality: abstract thought, classical physics, and quantum mechanics.
Which is mind-blowing.
It is, and that raises a profound question for you to think about. If the mathematical models we write on chalkboards map so flawlessly onto the physical constraints of cast iron gears, and so perfectly onto the quantum behavior of electrons,
did we actually invent them?
Exactly. Did we actually invent these mathematical rules as a tool to describe the universe? Or is mathematics simply the literal underlying physical scaffolding of reality itself, and we are just slowly discovering the blueprints? Something to think about the next time you try to divide by zero on a calculator. You aren't just breaking an arbitrary math rule, you are pushing directly against the physical limits of the universe's engine.